almost kept going, didn't you? You saw the sign, you drove on, but then you thought better of it, and you pulled a U-ey right there in the middle of old Highway 23 and came back. Glad you did. It's the diner for Friday, June 9th, 2006. Welcome. Oh, I'm absolutely parched. And I'm sweating through my shirt, too, which is a peculiar combination. It's an absolute sauna in here. The air conditioning has gone out, and everybody at the diner is just sort of slumped in place with a fine sheen on their foreheads, shirts stuck to their back. Looking back at the booths, and nobody dares lean against the back of the booth because their shirts, which heretofore were soaked and uncomfortable and stuck to the back of the booth, are now cold from perspiration. So when they lean back, it's just... Life is miserable. What can I say? It's not one of those days where you want to sit in a diner full of metal, baking in the sun, drinking coffee. Yeah, I know there are some people who say that coffee is what you drink on a hot day because it better acclimates you to the hot weather. Which is right. Do you think in hell right now there are people who have been bobbing in a pit of boiling sulfur for the last 9,000 years, being speared in the buttocks by Beelzebub or Moloch or Baal or whoever, and they're thinking, man, I could really go for a Americano espresso right now with a double shot. I don't think so. I think what they want is a root beer float. If you could get a business shipping root beer floats to hell, no, I'm not sure exactly what their medium of exchange would be. No, everybody in hell is loaded. I'm pretty sure everybody in hell's got lots of money, nothing to spend it on. Huh, it's an interesting thought. I wonder how you would actually open up trade relations with hell. Who would be your intermediary nation or other world? It's probably what limbo is for. Limbo is actually probably just, you know, purgatory limbo. It's one big customs house full of lawyers who handle the deals between... I'm obviously delirious. Could I have that Jubal? Thanks. Getting snappy, too. You know, they probably broke the air conditioning on purpose so that people would buy more Coke products. Except, of course, the diner doesn't have any Coke products. It has Coke, but it doesn't have any Coke products. It has a variety of soft drinks that, you know, if they broke the air conditioning to make you buy more soda, that would be as invidious, as insidious, as the movie theaters oversalting their popcorn to make people buy more soda. Didn't we all learn that at some point about the deviousness of corporations? Those movie theater owners, they put extra salt in there to make you buy soda. Please. They didn't have to. If you've ever been to the movie theater and you've seen what happens when people have control over the salt shaker, people will stand there and upend that thing until 75 days worth of their total salt consumption has been dumped into the bucket. The reason that people like to do that, of course, is because there's nothing quite like popcorn salt. It's granulated down to the individual sodium chloride molecules, it seems. When I was a youth in Fargo, the only place that you could get popcorn salt was the movie theater. Oh. You could get three things. You could get those oversized boxes of candy. You could get golden topping, which was inevitably described as golden topped, T-O-P apostrophe T. And they would just pump that stuff in until your kernels were swimming in it. And you could have the popcorn salt. And then at some point, in the early 70s, I believe, they actually made popcorn salt, the finely granulated stuff, available in stores for individual purchase. You no longer had to go to the movie theater. And now that I think about it, that's probably the thing that started the decline of the movie theater in the 70s. It wasn't finally television. It wasn't other entertainment options. It wasn't the gas crisis that made it so ruinously expensive to drive to the theater. Oh, no. It was the fact that the one thing that really set them apart in the whole popcorn experience was now available at the super value. People didn't need to go there anymore for it. And so Hollywood responded with the usual ways, which, of course, was dystopian science fiction movies with Charlton Heston and a lot of grim and gritty movies, all of which starred Robert De Niro shooting somebody, and of course Smokey and the Bandit films. That turned things around for them, and they were able to counteract the loss of the exclusivity of the granulated salt franchise. Oh, here's my Jubal, thank God. Foam. Nature's way of teaching children about patience. Come on. Go down. Go down, Moses. Here we go. Finally. Sorry. I realize that's rude. But there's nothing like a nice cold Jubal. Wouldn't you agree? I bet that's a little presumptuous of me, isn't it? You may not know what Jubal is. Well, Jubal is a soft drink. It's locally made, locally bottled, with pride, I'm sure. It hasn't been made in 46 years. But apparently the diner stocked up on it. And there are untold number of bottles cooling right now in the earth-sheltered caverns below the diner. I have no idea exactly how much they have left. But every time I ask for a Jubal, they've got one for me, fresh as the day it was bottled. Hard to describe the flavor, sort of a cunning combination of cola, ginger, prune, lemon, lime, quinine, cocaine, and essence of horseradish that really adds some indefinable quality to it. It's a great thirst slaker. As a matter of fact, everyone here at the counter is having their thirst slaked by a Jubal. Come on over, baby. Whole lot of slaking going on. Huh? Yeah, sorry. Well, whilst I indulge in self-slakery here, let me put something on the jukebox and hope that it cools our mood somewhat. Let's go to G3.
After school, I just can't wait. Got myself a standing date. Soda fountain, edge of town. Find two seats and sit right down and order one soda, two straws. Uh-huh. In she walks, my teenage queen. Cutest thing you've ever seen. Sets herself across from me. Just so all the crowd can see. We're sharing one soda, two straws. Uh-huh. How I love to sit and look into her big blue eyes while her kissing lips are sipping sips and sigh and sighs. After that we talk a while, talk and then we walk a while. Same thing happens every day. At her door we kiss and say, tomorrow, one soda, two straws. Uh-huh. I love to sit and look into her big blue eyes while her kissing lips are sipping sips and sighing sighs. After that we talk a while, talk and then we walk a while. Same thing happens every day. At her door we kiss and say, tomorrow, one soda, two straws. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Ah, the innocent days. When Coca-Cola was an aphrodisiac. And a spermicide, if I remember correctly. I do regret, a little, not a lot, but a bit, a jot, a tittle, the end of the glass bottle as a means of disseminating beverages. I mean, when you think about it, it's tremendously inefficient. The infrastructure that had to be developed to get the bottles back to the bottler. Nowadays, you're perfectly content to have an aluminum can without romance, without heft that you can crunch up and recycle. But a glass bottle does have a certain presence to it. It feels colder in your hand. It feels colder to drink from. And the labels were wonderful, especially the painted ones. I don't know why they bothered, frankly, because when you saw the bottle in the machine, you didn't see the label. You saw only the cap. The cap would tell you what you were buying. My father had a gas station, and my father had a soda machine in the gas station. Most of the clients, I'm sure, of that particular machine were the guys who worked there, because in July, working in the automotive service bays with engines running and the North Dakota sun beating down on the metal roof, you wanted a Coke. It wasn't a wonderful, classic, streamlined 1940s Coke machine. Oh no, it was this sort of dull, blunt 1960s model. But I do recall going up there and putting in my dime and finding something new. Mountain Dew. Oh, we'd heard rumors. You know, you'd have a friend in another part of the country and they'd say, "Do you have Mountain Dew yet?" And you'd lie, of course, because you couldn't let them know that in North Dakota, we were generally 6 to 9 months, okay, years behind the other trends of the world. But here it was, in Dad's gas station, Mountain Dew. Now, rather than being aimed at the hip, extreme youth with attitude, Mountain Dew back then had, as its spokespeople, hillbillies. Classic 1960s Beverly Hillbilly-style hillbillies. The hats with no tops and straws coming out the... And the yokels with the shoes with the big toes protruding out the end. A big blunderbuss in one hand and an outhouse somewhere. Well, did they have an outhouse? I don't think so. I think I'm adding that. I don't really think you'd put an outhouse on the label of a beverage, especially one that encouraged micturation at a higher rate than, say, milk. No, but we tried it, and we were astonished because we frankly had never tasted anything like it. We had no idea what this flavor was, and to this day, I can't even tell you what it is. It's just dew. So even though the brand itself has been corrupted by subsequent ad campaigns, and indeed, they've spent coin for no reason that I can imagine, extending the brand into things like Code Red. Code Red. What exactly is that Mountain Dew Code Red? Makes no sense. It's like it's like Coca-Cola Sign Blue. What's the blue? Well, that's a blueberry essence. Yes, but Coca-Cola has no blueberry essence. Well, there's no Coke flavor in it. It's just blue. Well, then why do you call it Coke? I take these things seriously. But to this day, Mountain Dew is just a thing by itself. It's utterly unique. Then came NRG. They added this to the machine, and I was quite stunned, because when I took it out, it looked like milk. It shone almost as though the bottle had been infused with radium. NRG. What could it be? I popped the cap off. And there's a skill, incidentally, that I think people have lost. An instinctive skill that everybody who grew up in the era of bottle and bottle tops knew. You took the bottle, you jammed it in the slot, you pushed down, twisted it off, and then you drank. If you handed a bottle today to somebody who was 10 or 12, I'm not sure they would know exactly what to do. They would try to twist it off, and their hand would shred and bleed, and there'd be lawsuits. So I took the bottle of NRG, and I popped it in, and I took a drink. What could this milk-like substance be? And the answer was milk. It was milk. Milk. You expect soda, you get milk. Oh, cruel fate. Of course, it took me years before I realized that NRG meant energy. Never really associated milk with energy, but that was the old ad campaign, I guess. There was something about lactic acid that filled you with vim, vigor, and or pep. But Mountain Dew and energy were the anomalies in our sodaverse. Mostly what we had was Shasta. That's what you got when the uncles were buying the soda for the camping trip. The uncles would go to the package store and get the beer, and they'd pick up some Shasta for the kids. It came in every possible flavor, every variation, including, of course, Shasta Cola, the name of which, come to think of it, sounds like some sort of Russian missile base facility. Today, ICBMs blast off from glorious base in Shastakola. Or maybe Shastakola. I'm probably being too hard on it. I just remember it as being lots of work, frankly, and always disappointing. Always slightly off. Always slightly flat. These were the days before pop-top cans, mind you. The idea of simply taking a can and popping the top was way in our future. Oh, maybe astronauts could open up a can of soda in space without an implement, but we, here on Earth, we had to deal with something called the church key. And no kid could ever understand why it was called the church key. If you came to a sanctuary that happened to be locked, this device would not grant you egress. Unless, of course, you stuck the pointed end in the spine of a padre and frog marched him over and made him use the keys to open the door. A church key, what was it? Well, it was a sharp metal eye-gouging tool that you used to poke holes in a can. You would put one big triangular gouge on one side of the can and put a small triangular indentation on the other. These were the days when adults would sit around smoking in front of the children, and when the children wanted to have an over-sugared caffeinated beverage, they would toss them a sharp, pointy object and say, here, gouge out the metal with yourself, and then push it to your face. Somehow we all survived, however, without significant oral lacerations. So the church key, however long and late and lamented, wasn't that dangerous. Oh, the air conditioning repairman has showed up. Huh. Natty fellow. White jacket. White pants. White cap. White shoes. A very symbolic embodiment of refrigeration, you might say. And he's frowning. He's brightening slightly. And he's grinning broadly. Trickle. Man, it is freezing in here now. All my flesh is... it's goosed. What exactly is the evolutionary reason for that anyway? Why don't we get goose flesh when we're cold? Is it supposed to warm us up somehow? I don't know. It doesn't seem to be working anyway. I mean, nobody ever says, well, maybe 20 below here, but my flesh is nubbled and my nipples are pointy, so I'm just... toasty warm now. Man, it reminds me of when we first got an air conditioner in Fargo way back in the 1970s. My dad had that thing set as though he had been temporarily entrusted with a cryogenically frozen head of Walt Disney, and the guys who were supposed to come and get it had just never shown up, so we had to keep the house at a constant 30 below. I mean, it's just, maybe it's a Midwestern thing. The air conditioning is always set high, very high. You walk in the door on a hot day, and you frankly expect to be met by penguins. It's just very, very cold. What's the waitress doing now? That's a microwave. I don't think that's quite good. See, you open the door and there's no heat coming out. Nice try. Well, maybe I'll get out my Zippo here and warm up some Jubal. In the meantime, let me find something else here in the jukebox that is soda related.
One chocolate soda with two straws for my baby and me. One chocolate soda with two straws. Gosh, oh, golly, oh, gee. Eyes to eyes, nose to nose, knees to knees, and toes to toes. One chocolate soda with two straws for my baby and me.
Take my baby to the show, then to the soda shop we go. Slide into a booth, fast as you can. And then I look up and say to the man,
one chocolate soda with two straws for my baby and me.
Ow!
One chocolate soda with two straws. Gosh, oh, golly, oh, gee.
Ow!
Eyes to eyes, nose to nose, knees to knees.
knees and toes to toes. One chocolate soda with two stars for my baby and me. Chocolate soda with two straws. Gosh, oh, golly, oh, gee. Eyes to eyes, nose to nose, knees to knees, and toes to toes. One chocolate soda with two straws for my baby and me. One chocolate soda with two straws for my baby and me. Oh, one chocolate soda with two straws for my baby.
What was it about that particular soda consumption configuration that inspired so many songs? Two, at last count. I mean, one bottle, two straws, you get half as much. I mean, it's all nice and romantic, I'm sure, to share with your dreamboat as you sit there sipping with your foreheads barely touching in a societally approved courtship manner, but it could possibly just mean that the guy is cheap and it doesn't feel like springing for another bottle of your own. Oh, they'd learn someday, maybe, if they got up the courage to leave their small towns with their rude, rough-handed swains, make their way to the big city and find a class of men who'd buy them their own soda. Here, sister, have another bottle. There's more where that came from. Then they'd write their friends back home. New York is more than I possibly can imagine. Nobody shares soda around here. Two sodas, two straws. It's a land of riches. I can't take this anymore. I'm sorry. Excuse me, folks. I'm freezing. I don't know about you, but does anybody want to turn the air conditioner off? Show of hands. How many want the air conditioner on? All right. Okay. How many want the air conditioner off? Well, it appears we're hopelessly deadlocked. I'll tell the judge. How about this? How about if I spring for a round of Jubal for everybody? Cold, frosty Jubal, fresh from the underground caverns, if we turn the air conditioner off. We can open up the windows, folks. We can have a classic summer. You know, with the windows open and the breeze and the birds. What do you say? I see some nods. I see grudging assent. All right, thanks. I'm going to turn the air conditioner off. Jubal for the house, if you will. Hold on, I'll be right back. Ah. That magic interlude between the time when the heat from outside overwhelms the residual air conditioning inside. Perfect. It's a personality thing. It's a temperamental thing, I know. Personally, I would rather be hot and not wearing a lot of clothing than cold in the summer and having to wear a lot. I don't know, for example, how people in the 20s managed to survive in big cities on a hot day. You see pictures of Coney Island in the 20s, and what will you see on the beach? You'll see guys standing there in a three-piece suit with a tie. And a straw boater screwed on their Vaseline heads. You can imagine what that thing smelled like. And the idea of going to the beach when it's 85 degrees and 89% relative humidity and standing there in a three-piece suit, my God. Oh, but those were summer suits, don't you know? The fabrics breathed. No, they didn't. If they breathed, they breathed like an 80-year-old emphysemiac. I think there was a cartoon by Warner Brothers in the 90s. The emphysemiacs, yeah, there's little sprites that ran around gasping a lot. It was unimaginably uncomfortable to live before air conditioning. Now, of course, we are not only used to it, we're used to ice. What a boon ice is. Now imagine, let's say it's 1940, you're a dad, you come home and you don't have air conditioning at all, and you're sitting down with a family for dinner. Do you take your hat off? You do, because it's the table. Do you take your tie off? You do not. You keep your tie cinched, because, as David Gelertner describes in one of his essays about the culture of the 30s and 40s, men wore their ties at the dinner table. That was part of what he called the ought culture, what you ought to do. These are the ways in which a man ought to behave. And I understand that, and I have a certain amount of sympathy for that. But I don't believe that the social order would have completely disintegrated into shards that could not be reconstructed if Dad had loosened his tie halfway through the salad course, okay? I mean, as it was, Dad was probably sweating so much that the tie was wicking away his vital bodily moisture, and they had to fetch a pail of beer and pour it down his gullet before Dad passed out from dehydration. You had to sweat a lot in those days. And after you were done with the meal, done sweating, you rehydrated yourself, you sat down with a nice cool something or other, with ice. Now, ice today is just ubiquitous. I walk up to my refrigerator, I shove a glass into its aperture, and I say, "Ice, please," and out tumbles perfectly formed ice cubes. You know, I don't have to say "ice, please," but I do. I grew up on Star Trek, and I like to give vocal commands to my machinery, even though it's not particularly necessary. It's pathetic. But the ice comes out, and the ice is perfect. But back in the 40s, of course, well, go back before that, go to the 20s, go back to the teens. They had ice. But where did it come from? And more importantly, where had it been exactly? Ice in the old days came from ice farms. They would go out to the lakes in the middle of winter, carve up the ice and put it in these damp sheds and pack it with sawdust, and then bring it out a piece at a time throughout the rest of the year. I imagine that the ice around September was pretty much in runny brie state. It's possible they could have just given you a bucket of water and said, you know, "I'm sorry. It was barely ice when I left, and, you know, now it's just cold water. Go ahead. This one's on us." But you had ice, and ice was a rarity. Ice was a luxury. Then, of course, came home refrigeration. Everybody had their own Frigidaire, and in the top freezer compartment you had little trays, which I remember well. For one thing, no, for two. One was the difficulty, actually, of pulling that lever. In order to get ice out of these trays, you had to pull the lever back and crack the ice open. The action would cause these metal blades to move forward, and thereby freeing this solid block of ice into small little constituent cubes and an awful lot of shards. What you usually ended up doing was ruining half the cubes. If your hand was wet in any way, your hand would adhere to the metal on that particular cube rack, and you would end up tearing off some skin. So generally, I grew up with bloody ice. You know, the 60s was a time of bloody ice. That was later replaced, of course, by these plastic trays. The plastic trays you would pop. They were flexible, so that you could take them somewhere and twist them, and the ice cubes would all pop out on the floor, or in the sink, where they would melt or get covered with the detergent or food or the rest of it. Frankly, it's been an ice-related nightmare, you know, until the advent of the machines in the refrigerators that respond to your voice commands, or not, as the case may be. Yeah. So we're used to... But there's another kind of ice, too, that's the most insidious of all. And that's hotel bar ice. Never been able to understand this exactly. What kind of ice machine they have, what special kind of water they have. But you can order a drink in a hotel bar, and the guy will, you know, get some ice out, and you'll pour the hooch in it, and the ice is gone. It's just dissolved. There are these little slivers of ice that instantaneously convert to water. What is the point, exactly? I always want to push the drink back and say, "Excuse me, bub. You got any solid ice back there? You got some manly ice back there? You got some ice with a pear? You got some ice that can stand up to... You got some ice we can use?" You get the hard looks. Oh, look at that. Time for a word from our sponsor once again.
Which way did he go?
He went for Faygo!
Oh, the stagecoach was a-heading through the mountain. The stage they call the Wells Faygo Express. The cargo, so I hear, Faygo old-fashioned root beer, the tasty drink with creamy head goodness. Look out! It's a hold-up! It's Black Bart!
Oh, save me!
hush up, gal. It's that famous drink I want. That case of Faygo old-fashioned root beer.
Stand where you are. Black Bart, you are through.
It's the Faygo kid.
Madam, do not fear. I will save your Faygo old-fashioned root beer.
So the stagecoach went on heading through the mountains, and old Black Bart went off to jail, I hear.
The Faygo kid. Which way did he go? Which way did he go?
He went for Faygo!
He went for Faygo, old-fashioned root beer.
Well, no Faygo here, just lots of Jubal and lots of happy, satisfied Jubal drinkers. It's amazing. Now that everybody's got one in their hands, nobody seems to be hot at all. Everyone's cool and relaxed. I wonder where they stopped making this stuff. I wonder what it was made of in the first place for that. Oh, that's interesting. The air conditioning guy is back. He's looking at the unit. Huh. No, hold on a second. Wow. I guess it was running a little too high. He's looking at his clipboard and studying the specs, and it looks like they had that thing running a little too fast. That's why it got so cold in here. Well, that's a big relief. Now he's examining a reservoir. Huh. Wow, I didn't know that. Freon, it says on it. Wow. The diner has an old-style Freon air conditioner. Well, of course, that's no surprise to me, really, but I thought those were illegal. I mean, where do you get Freon nowadays? He's fishing around in his bag for something to... And he's brought out a quart bottle of Jubal. And he's pouring it into the Freon reservoir. So either Jubal can double as Freon, or Jubal is Freon. Well, that would explain its frosty restorative effect, wouldn't it? How much of this stuff have I drunk? Well, it hasn't done any harm to me so far, and aside from wasting 30 minutes of your life, I hope this hasn't done any harm to you either. It's been The Diner for Friday, June 16th. Thanks for coming by, and we'll see you next week. Come on, we took a vote.